these things do take time to percolate through a system or through society, and there will be resistance with any kind of change. But I think what we are going to look back on, and our children are going to look back on years from now, the way we would look back on, you know, smoking in restaurants or leaded petrol or whatever, that, you know, in the future and in the near future, hopefully people say, it's just not socially acceptable to build your retirement on the basis of corporate activity that is just generally terrible for the world and the people that live in it. It's just, we just don't do it that way anymore.
Welcome to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. Today I'm talking to Evan Hughes and Kieran Hughes of Ethico Limited, an advisory practice focused on ethical and sustainable investing. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hey, Vincent, how are you getting on?
Vincent, thanks a million.
I was thinking back to when we first met. It was actually, I think we went for a coffee in a coffee shop down in, close to the Shelburne back in 2019. I was talking about my ideas around ESG Ireland, and you were in the early stages, I think, of establishing Ethico and your ideas around making responsible investment the core part of the advisory practice. Can you maybe share a little bit how that has developed and your thoughts on the momentum that we've seen over the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's right. That's interesting, Vincent. I remember that myself. It was funny. I had actually, a couple of days prior to that, I was in one of the life companies in Dublin, actually not too far from there as well, because we had just recently got regulated. Myself and Ciarán had been kind of working on setting up the company for kind of a couple of years actually before that, kind of implementing the plan, getting regulated. And we were kind of at the stage of kind of talking to product providers and what was there to choose from. And your name came up and they said, look, you should have a chat with Vincent. He's operating in this space. He's trying to, you know, increase awareness and talk to trustees and fund managers and so on. So that's ultimately what led to that coffee. But yeah, things have changed, and things even around that time changed very quickly. Like we were, you know, maybe in the early part of 2019 and into late 19, talking to fund managers, telling them, and product providers saying, you know, we're going to launch this company. This is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be focusing on, you know, sustainable investments and ethical and environmentally friendly investments and so on. And a lot of blank stares, you know, a lot of fund managers going, yeah, not really big enough market for us. We're not really that interested. Irish people don't want that, you know. But to be fair, a few companies were like, yeah, okay, we see something in this. We see where the way the wind is blowing. And, you know, I think the Irish market is still that way to a degree. I think there is still a lot of the product providers are kind of turning their back on ESG investing and stuff like that. But thankfully, some of them are taking it much more seriously. And you have obviously seen that over the last couple of years. And it's good to see it percolating down to investment advisor level, you know, going to events and talking to colleagues in the industry. The knowledge and awareness has improved enormously. Again, partially through some of the work you do as well with training advisors and stuff like that. You know, I'm sure you've seen it from where you started to where things are now. There is much better knowledge there. And then, of course, we've obviously launched the business and we've seen the growth and a bit of an increase in the demand coming from the end consumers, you know, from savers and people who are looking to start pensions, knocking on our door or coming through to us through the website, you know, asking these questions, looking for something that's in line with their goals, and not just financial goals. The financial goals are always there, but now starting to look at, they don't use this terminology necessarily, but looking to achieve ESG goals as well.
Yeah, I remember back, I think it was the end of 2018 when I first put on a workshop in Dublin around the impact of your investments. It was very hard to get people there. So it has dramatically changed. I remember saying to stakeholders, look, this isn't like you can just turn on a light switch. You need to put in the time into this. And I suppose over the last number of years, we've seen investment advisors and others to put some time into this, varying degrees, of course. But the backdrop that has changed has really been the change in regulation. I think, you know, we'd like to say people want to do the right thing, etc., and things like that. But in the end of the day, I suppose the big driving force has been regulation. And now, most recently, we've seen that sustainability preferences have to be part of the conversation. And this is putting advisors in a difficult position because they're, I suppose, slightly overwhelmed by this new addition to the advisory process. And if you look at the definitions, which we might discuss a little bit, they are quite heavy. As I say, the regulation isn't written to entertain. But the fact that you've been ahead of this and you've been incorporating into your discussions already with your clients, how have you tried to approach that? Because, you know, I think we both agree most clients don't come to you with all of the answers. They're coming to you to understand where they should put their money to save for retirement or maybe the education for the kids, whatever it may be. And so I imagine it's been a bit of a task to make sure that those clients understand the range of options and the terminology that's been used, etc.
So I suppose what we've found, well, when you have ethical written over the door, you do tend to attract a certain type of client, which is great because they already have an idea in their head when they land, you know, what it is they're looking for. Now, that may not always be available or it may not always be the correct definition, but whatever about regulation, you know, a lot of our clients who land into us and then they're looking to start a pension or a savings plan or whatever it might be, they already have an idea in their head where they want to start from. From there, then, it actually kind of takes an organic role because as part of that conversation where you're starting with, you know, straightforward, good, honest financial advice to begin with and going through product selection and everything else and tax relief and all the other complications that come with being a financial advisor and in that relationship, fact-finding the whole way through, then, you know, you've almost started the conversation with sustainability and what their version of it is. And then you do the education piece maybe at the back end where you bring them on the journey through, you know, maybe further their knowledge on what sustainability is from an investment perspective so that then they can come with you on the journey, have a better understanding. And then when you look at the options that are available in the Irish market, it's been an organic process. So yes, you can ask a number of questions on a questionnaire about, you know, what sustainability factors are important to you. But fundamentally, that client came in with an idea of what they wanted, you worked with them, you brought them further through the journey. So then when it comes to actual fund selection, they're much happier with their choice and they're much more educated in their choice than they were when they started out. And actually, you know, so far regulation has played a very small part in that journey. I suppose, Evan, I jump over to you then to cover maybe some of the regulation stuff that's coming.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right in what you say there, Karen, and Vincent, likewise. Like, sure, there's bottom-up demand to a degree, and yes, that's increasing. The clients will increasingly, you know, look for sustainable solutions, but that's really a small part of it. You know, the bigger lever, I suppose, you're right, that's going to be pressed and is being pressed is that top-down regulation, largely being driven by the EU. And it's that regulation that's obviously driving the change with asset managers, and that's flowing down to advisors, and advisors are struggling to understand this new landscape and figure out what their requirements are under the regulation or what they will be. And I think that's something that's not done particularly well in terms of how it's been explained, timelines given to guys to wrap their heads around this stuff and implement it in their businesses. You know, it seems, and I'm not being flippant here, but it seems you get an email going, these are the new rules as of today, lads, but don't worry, the legislation and the explanatory notes and how you implement this and what it really means for your clients, it'll come along, we'll get there before the end of the year or maybe next year, but you need to put something on your website tomorrow. It all seems a little bit lastminute.com and firefighting and stuff like that. So, you know, I can understand advisors not being comfortable in this space and not being comfortable to broach it with their clients, because of course there's a fear that you're saying the wrong thing and that you're not actually adhering to regulations and stuff like that. So, you know, I can see guys pulling away from it. And I think you need to appreciate, or people need to appreciate, the job that the advisor does. So, you know, people writing regulations and legislation and so on, it's very technical work, it's very technical language, and it assumes a certain level of knowledge, of expertise of the people reading and looking to implement those regulations. But actually, at a very basic level, when you break it down to, here's an advisor sitting across from a client, and a client has sat down at their desk or come through their website, the level of financial knowledge, and there are exceptions to this, of course, some Irish consumers are extremely well informed and, you know, would might put an advisor to shame in terms of their knowledge. But the average understanding of financial products isn't fantastic. You know, advisors have got to take their clients on a fairly involved and a fairly long journey to help them make sensible decisions. You know, lots of clients wouldn't necessarily even understand that their pension invests in anything. They just think it's money that leaves my bank account or it's money that leaves my payslip. And you're going, Okay, but here's what happens now. That money's pooled and it's invested, and it's invested in lots of different things to diversify. And you explain what diversification is, and you're into risk and returns and charges and tax relief and all the stuff that has to be a part of a conversation to take somebody potentially from zero and put them in a position of trying to make an informed decision and help them achieve their financial goals. And now the advisor are also now going to be tasked with saying, and now we now bring need to bring this other element in, and there isn't this clarity around yet how and where to integrate that as part of the process, or what exactly are the questions that should be asked. And you've got to be careful about where you put that in the process. If you lead up front and ask these questions to a client too early in the process, they're going to go, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean my sustainability preferences? What is that? What does that mean? There's going to be a period of time of finding our feet and working it out. But advisors will get there. I mean, the advisory industry has shown time and time again that the rules change, regulations change, products change, and people adapt and they figure it out, and they figure out a way of bringing their clients on that journey. But it's going to take time to bed in.
Yeah, and I think there was a couple of points that you both made there are key. I mean, Ciarán said about the fact that you have to focus on the education of the clients as well. So this is a foreign language, I think, as you said, to a lot of people. So from risk return and now sustainability preferences, there's a level of work that's required to make sure that clients are informed. And I suppose that's what will differentiate advisors over the long term, because there will be some people who say, look, do a simple questionnaire, arrive at a solution, and we're done. Whereas I've always been of the view as well, is that if you make sure that your clients are informed and there's a detailed process in place, the solutions that you arrive at, they'll have a clear understanding of how they got there. And so when there is, we've seen the market's been quite volatile. If you have that type of situation, there's less panic, I think, sets in, even just from an investment perspective. And so I think that's important. From the regulation perspective, you're right. I mean, there is so much regulation coming out, and in the fact that not all of the regulation is implemented. And as you said, the regulation comes in, the deadline is out, and then we'll follow up with guidelines and the consultation papers. So what I suppose we need to find is that balance between the very prescriptive nature of regulation, and the kind of fact that it can be quite heavy, to something that's actually practical, that advisors and clients can work with, so that if you have a client coming in, that you can have meaningful discussions within that context of that most clients actually are not that well informed around financial products. And striking that balance is probably going to take a number of years, I would
Yeah,
suspect.
it will, and it's flowing. It flows from the top down. Generally, information. The information is held by certain people in the system or in society, and it flows down. And so, many of the people you've had on the show and would be listening here today, obviously working in the industry, very in-depth knowledge of ESG and investing and the nuances of it and stuff like that. But I think as you come down each step from that and from specialist level to broader, insurance company level to financial advisor level to a client, you need to generalize more, and specific terms and terminology that can have a very particular meaning to somebody working in a particular area of the industry may be meaningless to somebody at the end of that supply line, if you like, and they may use different terminology or apply different meanings to it. So we need to be careful about that as well. So, like, the information and the education piece is hugely important, and like the work that you're doing in terms of educating advisors is key, because that it's the advisors who are at the coalface, who are speaking to companies and speaking to individuals, talking to them about their pensions and the pension schemes and their investments. And so that's a key part of the job. And so getting advisors comfortable with talking about sustainability, having a good working knowledge of what the regulations expect and how and when they can implement that with their clients, I think that's absolutely going to be crucial, because I think that's really how a lot of the knowledge does translate to the end consumer to help them make these decisions. And like Kieran has
And
mentioned,
to jump in
yeah.
there for a second, I was just thinking again, as you're coming down those tiers or those steps, yes, to have a very strong knowledge of how it works, and for the advisor, to be well versed in it. But then it's crucial that it's not overly complicated for the end user, Because imagine what's the worst thing in the world if you go to buy, I don't know, whatever, you go to set up whatever, a pension, or you go to buy a car, you go to do whatever you want to do, and the process is ridiculously complicated. The language is language you're uncomfortable with, and fundamentally, then, like a deer in the headlights, people don't take action. Does that person then not save for their retirement? Do they not start their
That's a
pension?
good point, yeah.
Right? So it's super important that, like with anything, if you're able to break it down to a very simple language, it doesn't have to be, you know, you can take complex concepts and make them quite simple. You know, maybe it's like take out the bad stuff, put in more good stuff, work with the rest to improve. You know, if you can make it that simple for someone and then expand on that concept, that's going to be well below, you know, the normal level of explanation you'll have on this podcast, right? But the point is, it's that if I, you know, when you go to get your car serviced, I don't need to know how the engine works. I just, you know, give me the broad strokes of it, and then let me pay you and get out of here, you know. So there's an element of that too. Once people understand the concepts in simple language, I think that's you're doing them more of a service in that way.
Yeah, and I think I mean I had another guest on. I was saying, are we literally just going through this wave of complexity to eventually arrive at something that has to be quite simple, you know? And that seems to be the way it's going. And the fact that there's so much regulation, and the way I think about it is, you've got sustainability preferences and you've got sustainable investments, and you're trying to align those two. But when you look through the definitions, obviously you've got within the preferences component, you've got taxonomy. Okay, what does taxonomy? The word alone will confuse people. You look at the objectives behind that. You've got SFDR, again, more disclosures regulation, but that can be quite in depth. You've got do no significant harm. And then in the definition of sustainable investment, something along the same lines, but you still have a degree of interpretation that is required. So I suppose my hope is similar to yourselves, is that when we have more of these consultation papers and we have this balance between industry and regulation, that we get to this place where they realize, okay, some of this just is going to get, the whole thing is going to get lost. And your overarching plan of clients having preferences to move into sustainable investments and to have less of an impact on the planet and society, and a more of a positive impact on society, that's not going to happen if people don't understand where they're going to be putting their money. So I'm in agreement with yourself that we need to, I suppose, what was Einstein said, make it as simple as possible, but not simpler. Something that works for everybody. So that's where we need to get. But then, and so I suppose we discussed briefly the preferences side of it. Then, when you come to actually finding solutions, you would have your fund categorization framework in terms of categorizing a broad range of funds that already exist, irrespective of how we think about sustainability. And then you add this layer of ESG and sustainability into the conversation, and you've got the disclosures regulation. Has it been a case of adapting your fund categorization framework so that as new funds are launched or funds are reclassified according to the regulatory categories that have been set, you're not always reinventing the wheel to try and find an appropriate solution for your client?
Yes and no, as in to a degree. I mean, we've been doing this in-house and kind of organically, as Kieran has said. And you know, we've had a framework that we've worked with. And to be fair as well, like I said, having those conversations with the life companies back in 2018 and 19, there's a very limited pool of end products you can choose from, you know. So a client could walk in the door, a very well-informed client, a very savvy client who could answer very detailed sustainability questionnaire if you put them in front of them. And then you go to the Irish marketplace and you kind of go, actually, there's nothing to exactly fit your needs here, okay? Because it's quite a limited bucket to work from. Now, thankfully, it's changing and it is expanding. And certainly as part of, you know, if we're looking at the simplification, I mean, certainly clients do understand things like light green, dark green in terms of the Article 8 and the Article 9 under the SFDR. That's certainly a step in the right direction. We then, as advisors, have to, you know, kind of pull those apart and say, all right, well, does an Article 8 with Company A equate to an Article 8 with Company B and with Company C? And is everybody kind of playing on a level playing field here or not? And I suppose that's always going to be the advisor's job. I don't think you could never expect a client to get to that level. So, you know, more choice from the product providers would be great. I'd love to see more choice out there. And I would also love to see and I know, Vincent, this is a theme that you come back to it, that they're genuine efforts, that these funds, as and when they're introduced to the marketplace, are, you know, a bona fide effort to offer a sustainable product on the marketplace, not simply to take, this is what we were flogging yesterday, and we'll retweak it slightly and stick a green label on it, and now, you know, it's an Article 8. I'm not saying that that's what's happening, but I would hope that it wouldn't, and that, as I said, you know, there's better offers there, and they are genuine offers for clients. I think that's important. I think it's crucial to the industry, because if we get this wrong, and, you know, customers lose faith, you know, because they're going in with goodwill, they want to make changes with their money, they want to make changes with their investments, they need to go in with their eyes open and be informed what an Article 8 is or isn't, or what an Article 9 is or isn't. But if they find out later they've been promised one thing and it transpires to be something else, you know, that's terrible. You're going to lose your early adopters in the marketplace, and they're going to get very disillusioned. So if it's got to be done right, people have to not just adhere to the letter of the regulations, let's say, but also the spirit, I think, is crucial.
Yeah, no, that's a point that I emphasize with the various stakeholders I work with, that they need to focus on the essence of the regulation. And I know dealing with investment managers, they're faced with their own challenges in terms of the various templates that they have to fill out to provide all the reporting and the disclosures. And I think that, again, comes back to our point that if it just becomes a big reporting exercise, then the end impact is going to be fairly minimal. So that's where hopefully investment managers will be able to develop the right solutions that can meet those end objectives without falling victim to just filling out Excel files to meet disclosure requirements. So there's, I think across the board, you need to see that authenticity. And then they've their own challenges to make sure that, let's not forget the underlying companies, because we talk a lot about investment funds, but, you know, the client has gone into an investment fund, they might see the ABC fund, but behind that, there's, if it's an equity fund, there's the companies that make up that fund. And so the investment managers have a big role to play in making sure that those companies are actually following through on their sustainability commitments. Because, as you know, it is the hot theme right now, and you're seeing more and more companies mention it and develop ESG reports and stuff like that. But a report is one thing and the action is the other. So that's going to be another challenge that we need to see it addressed, I think.
So what I find working with clients a lot is, you know, as you bring them on that educational piece or that educational journey, the most captivating part maybe of that, or where maybe the light bulb moment where you see it going on for people, is around ownership and engagement. And the more genuine, so what I would love to see more from providers is, and I mean, look, regulation is regulation, filling in spreadsheets is filling in spreadsheets, that has to be done. But what really stands out from a reputation point of view, and from a meaning point of view, and an impact point of view, is consistent, could be consistently strong and thorough and believable around engagement. Because people come in the door, generally speaking, they're not aware of the ownership, that the money that's in their pension is actually buying companies, and therefore they own it, and therefore, you know, they can have a say in how that company is run, albeit at arm's length via fund manager, etc. But when that idea kind of percolates a bit, they kind of think, right, well, you know, I do want my fund manager to engage on my behalf. I can have an impact on global corporate behavior. And the idea then that, well, if we all do this, and if we all do this together, then collectively we can have a big impact and change how that goes. So, yeah, I'm really keen, like, the further down this path we go, again and again, it's the ownership and the engagement piece that continues to rise to the top as the most captivating element for clients. So, you know, I'd love to see more of that. There is some good work going on out there, for sure, in the Irish market and beyond. I'd love to see more of it, and I'd love to see more genuine reporting of that engagement, where it's transparent. It's, you know, it's legible. It doesn't have to be 600 pages. Just, you know, give us the bullet points. But also what they did well and what they didn't maybe do as well on, and allow the clients to see the journey that it's on. Because I suppose the danger is, and again, you know, you can have a bit of this, you know, social media, I suppose, is great for this, is the gotcha. Well, you have an ESG fund there and Tesla's in it, or Tesla's not in it, or this, that, or the other. And all of a sudden it's a gotcha. I told you it wasn't an ESG fund. And you're going, you know, there's more to it than that. So I think the key is there is around, you know, it's a journey. another one of the main messages I think it's good to get across to clients is that, ESG is just a framework. You've said this multiple times yourself, but it's not perfect. But the key is that it's better than the benchmark. It's much better than the MSCI World Index or whatever benchmark you want to take, where there's no engagement, where there's no ESG work going on at all necessarily on the traditional markets. So it's what, when people become comfortable with the fact that this, what they're looking at now in this ESG fund is much better than, and there's this engagement piece and it's a movement in the right direction, people can then, I think, essentially put the money or buy into those products, more comfortable that the journey that they'll be on is much closer to the sustainability and ESG goals than if they went the traditional route.
Yeah, and I think the point around ownership is key, because I think that's what often gets missed. And if you think about the climate activism, sometimes, you see these marches and you see all these efforts being made, which is great, but at the same time they're probably missing the point that their money might be invested in a pension scheme and it's invested in certain companies that might be having a huge impact on the climate through emissions, etc. And I think that's sometimes where they miss that point that's so important, where their money is being invested and the impact of their money. And I think as well, just from a personal perspective, if people have a sense of connection and they go, okay, my money's invested in, let's say, Microsoft or whatever the name of the company is within the funds, well, they start to build a connection between their money and where it's actually going. So I think that's a really good point. The other point you made on the ESG framework about, the fact that it is just a framework, it's not perfect. It's going to evolve as well. Unfortunately, the world we live in, it's all about sound bites, right? So someone says ESG is a fraud, and then it makes loads of headlines, or ESG is this, and it's typically based on a misunderstanding or misconceptions or their own particular agenda that they might have. What's your feeling on some of that kind of polarized debate and some of the criticism that can be misguided, and at the same time you're there working away trying to improve your investment process and incorporate some of this stuff for the benefit of the clients and given the regulatory backdrop. And then you have some of the kind of rhetoric and some of the debate in the background, which can, I don't know about you, but it can, I suppose, draw on your energy levels a little bit to a certain extent,
Yeah, I mean, look, anytime there's change in any industry or any area of life, there's going to be pushback against it. No matter what it is, there will be pushback, and people are used to the status quo and they like the way things are done. And, there was proponents, I'm sure, all over the world telling us how wonderful leaded petrol was and it was perfect and we'd no need to change it at the time. And now, of course, we discover, we knew at the time, and now we discover years later, it's probably the one of the worst inventions we ever came up with was leaded petrol, So, these things do take time to percolate through a system or through society, and there will be resistance with any kind of change. But I think what we are going to look back on, and our children are going to look back on years from now, the way we would look back on, smoking in restaurants or leaded petrol or whatever, that, in the future and in the near future, hopefully people say, listen, it's just not socially acceptable to build your retirement on the basis of corporate activity that is just generally terrible for the world and the people that live in it. It's just, we just don't do it that way anymore. And legislation and always was, you'd vote in politicians on the basis of what society thought, and they would write that into legislation, and then they were the rules. But it was always the case that the need or the things that people asked for came first, and then the regulation follows on from it, the legislation follows on from it. So I think that's what we're seeing now, that there is this kind of awareness, there is this demand for sustainability, there is this concept amongst people at all different levels of society that this is the right thing to do, this is the right way to go. We can't continue to do business as normal. And so whether it's kind of this bottom-up demand, and now increasingly we're seeing, and rightfully so, seeing that this regulation from the top down to force through some of these changes that do have to be forced through, yes, you'll have their naysayers. Yes, you'll have people sniping, saying there's downsides to it, we're not doing it the right way. And yes, that's all true. Maybe there's a slightly better way to do it. Yes, things could be slightly done better. But we've got to do something. There's only one direction of travel with this. We can't keep doing what we were doing or go back to the way things were in the past.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd say to the people that I work with, the advisors that I've brought through various courses, I'm not an ESG evangelist. I'm providing information on a subject that's hugely important to your investment process. And you have to ultimately make the decisions in terms of how you incorporate it into your practice. But then most of all, it's not about you imposing your values or beliefs on clients. It's about understanding their particular preferences and then aligning them to the right solutions. And if we could have more conversations around that kind of idea and move things in the right direction, as you said, then I think there's much more chance of us having an impact over the long term. I think where things get stuck is where people take sides. I'm pro ESG. Oh, I'm against ESG. It's encroaching on our freedoms. I mean, you turn on Fox News and oil price spike is down to ESG. Sri Lanka is down to ESG. There's never any good stuff down to ESG, right? But I think some of the connections that are drawn are just madness, when it's just a framework. And if you're talking about freedom, well, clients should have the freedom to make their own decisions and where they want to put their money. And they can only do that if they're informed about what the options available to them are. So
that's what I see. Informed criticism, you'll take all day long, because you can have a discussion with somebody. You can say, you know, we're actually arguing it on its merits. But a lot of the stuff you're referring to there is uninformed criticism. It's somebody has a very loose misconception or a conception of what ESG is, and they start to pull it down because, as I say, they're used to doing it the old way and they don't want to change. They don't necessarily. And the easiest way to not to have to change is to just be dismissive of what's coming down the tracks. Actually, that's useless and here's why. But I think, and we see this with clients, like we talk to clients who come through our doors that have no conception of ESG or, you know, just came to us for a pension or came to us for some financial advice, didn't come through the door looking for a sustainable product. But once we've had that conversation with them and taken them through the basics of why you save for retirement and the tax relief and the charges and the risk and the return and all that stuff, and then we talk to them about how an ESG framework implemented on top of all that good stuff what that looks like and what that is involved, 9 times out of 10, those clients will turn around and say to us, that's what I want. I now don't want to do it the traditional way. When you take that 5 or 10 minutes just to walk them through it. So that education piece is absolutely crucial. And I think the people in the industry, even if they disagree with ESG, I don't think they're actually taking the time to get to grips with what it actually means and to understand it. And if they understand it, I think people see the upsides of it. I think clients are very warm to it once they understand what they're dealing with. I said, you know, uninformed criticism, as you say, Vincent, can be hard to take.
Just to add a bit to that, I suppose, I think you're always going to have bad actors, right? We see it, social media is a reading ground for this stuff, and just generally being a bad actor it's big business, right? You can make a very valuable living from just disagreeing and shouting everything down and all that kind of stuff. That stuff aside, I think there's some genuine, in the industry and more broadly, some genuine pushback on it, just because of maybe true lack of understanding, as you say. And from the conversations I've had, maybe with other brokers, etc., as people can get more comfortable with it, you know, if you've been doing something some way for many, many years, sometimes it can be difficult if you're being criticized now because there's a new, better way to do something. So it's coming from a point of advisors want to do the best thing by their clients, 100%, you know, 99% of the time, right? So then if that's in any way even sideways criticized by saying this is this other, better, new way of doing it, it kind of calls into question what they previously did, and they had done all of that with the best of intentions and everything else. Fundamentally, though, some of that noise, if we take long-term views as long-term investors, it's going to be irrelevant because it's going to wash through. I think that what's the point in saving into a pension if it's going to pay onto a dead planet? Doesn't make any sense, right? So what you're looking at there is generational change or a generational shift as wealth moves. We see it as well when we go to various events and we have the stand and that kind of thing. And the difference in attitude and generations who come to speak to us is massive, you know. So I think if you stand still in this moment with your bad actors and your noise and your criticism, it can be quite draining. I think you take a step back, you look at long-term view, you look at the generational change that's coming through and the sustainability movement more generally. It has to happen and it has to move in that direction. But look at it's not going to happen tomorrow necessarily, and it might just take a little bit longer to wash through, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, I mean, I point out to advisors the fact that we've already gone through one stage of evolution from the individual stock type of investing back in the 80s to now it's all about asset allocation, risk-adjusted returns. I remember I started as a in San Diego as a stockbroker, and then I worked with Merrill Lynch as a financial advisor. But there was one advisor in the one corner office, and his business was all based around individual stock ideas, concentrated portfolios of individual companies. And in another corner office where the advisor was all about risk-adjusted returns, asset allocation, building portfolios with a range of funds. And for me, that kind of that shows the range of approaches taken within the financial advisory world, but also that kind of evolution from an older advisor in the office, this was back in 2005, to an advisor who is pursuing asset allocation, which for the older advisors is something many of them would never buy into. So we have gone through some degree of evolution to begin with already, and I think the fact that now we're moving to risk, return, and sustainability impact is the next dimension to be added. It's not something to be feared, but that if we all work together, we can arrive at a point that is simple for people to understand. There's some standardization to it, and we can all feel comfortable that at least it's delivering some level of impact. Because that ultimately, I suppose, is the overarching objective of changing the way we do business, changing the way we invest money, so that we reduce the impact on our planet and improve our society to some degree. And if people are not on board with that, then there's not much I can say to that, really. But I suppose, look, just to finish off, I suppose the key points for me would be that, you know, regulation is evolving. It's at various stages in terms of its implementation, but it's about remembering what the essence of the regulation is trying to achieve. The fact that education is going to be a big part of this, because this is, to a certain extent, a foreign language to many clients that might walk in the door, just as is the subject of investments in general. And then the advisors and other stakeholders, it's about engagement across that chain. So you have to engage more with your clients, of course, but also with the investment managers who are faced with their own challenges. So I think that's pretty much the key points from our discussion today.
Yeah, absolutely, Vincent. I think, and look at if the product providers out there and the investment managers and stuff like that, I know, they, as you say, they have their own challenges, their own pressures, you know, in terms of delivering returns and, you know, everything else they've got to do and adhering to the regulations and stuff like that. But I think they should, you know, try and stay in touch with their advisors and try and stay in touch with the customers, because the customers speak a different language. It does need to be simple. It does need to be streamlined and to make it easy for customers to make these choices, but also that it's not oversimplified, as you say, and that there is that transparency. We'd love to see more of, you know, we hear it all the time that we voted against, you know, extra executive pay, and that's how we're ESG. Okay, that's fine, but we're assuming that. Okay, so tell us the other stuff. Tell us the stuff you did on the E, and tell us the stuff you did on the S, and show us the examples, and show us the stuff you actually voted at there at a company level, as you said. And that's showing that it's real, and they're stories that you can take back to your customers. Customers understand those stories of actual action happening in the real world as a result of the pension that they've invested in.
Okay, well, guys, thanks very much for your time today.
Cheers, Vincent.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the ESG Factor podcast. If you'd like to share any thoughts or feedback on today's episode, then you can email me at vincent@theesgfactor.com. Also, if you'd like to see the making of more independent content like this, you can join our Patreon community online. Just visit theesgfactor.com.